Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor's going to distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.com. FM to get started.
Tonight, we all shed tears for a character we really didn't know, but oddly, really liked. And is it the beard that makes Spock a dick? Star Trek Discovery starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome to Star Trek Discovery After Show. I am Christian Blatt. Flubba Boyce is on an away mission.
That's right.
And I insisted that he wear a blue shirt when he beamed down to the planet.
Smart thinking.
If he had worn a red shirt, we wouldn't see him again.
That's true. In fact, actually, a little later on, I'll tell you there's a new story about that.
I can't wait to hear that.
There you go.
I like that you've got little stories that I don't know anything about. Joined, as usual, by the one and only Frank Moran.
Oh, that's right. There really should be more because I'm not doing a good job at it.
No. I think you're the best Frank Moran that you could be.
That's not saying much. I set the bar extremely low.
Frank, overall, yes. Thoughts on episode 9?
This... I want to like this episode more, but I'm also frustrated, and as we'll delve into, but I think it's tough for them to do so little character development on a character and then really cram it all into one episode and then make you feel like, yep, all right, I really feel this emotional impact.
And yet, for me, maybe it's because I'm not dead inside, Frank, I found myself feeling a lot for her and much of the series. I wasn't even sure that it was her. I'm going to be completely honest. You know, I always thought like, well, maybe, but is it? I didn't know what her deal was. I mean, we didn't get it. And by the way, when in the beginning of the episode, we got to see so much of her backstory, I'm like, well, I want to say she's going to die this week, but I thought that about Saru in that episode where it looked like he was going to die. So I was, you know, expecting it, but I wouldn't have been surprised if she had lived. And I think the tragedy of it, it's one of those like, oh, we really didn't get to know you, and now we won't. And they're coming up with some pretty cool stuff about her. I would have liked to have had a better chance to know her.
But I feel like, but the only reason for that is that it's just because I feel like Discovery in the first season really didn't delve more into anybody else other than Burnham and Jason Isaacs, Lorca.
Yeah,
and,
it was the Burnham and Lorca show. I mean, it was really the Burnham show, and yeah. Then you know, featuring, you know, it's like Jay-Z featuring Nas. You know,
that's true.
It featured a few other characters, but it was really the Burnham show. And as interesting as I find Burnham, I like this season more because we get to see so much of the other characters.
Like you take that beginning, I would have loved it. We had a 43-minute episode a few weeks ago. Dump that few extra minutes into that episode. Start the process of getting us more invested in this character little bit more. So when the hammer does fall and feel like, all right, we've only gotten to know more about her, a little bit more intrigued by her, then I'm going to feel more. I mean, I still felt something, but I'm also robbed of the chance. It's like, boy, I feel like this could have been seeded out a few more episodes more to get me to really make it hit home.
Right, and the impact it would have had Saru actually died in that episode, I would have been very upset. I would have been angry, too, because he's, you know, one of my favorite characters. And I also, even though we've gotten to know him more, I'm like, well, there's so much more to know. And yeah, let us know, for those of you watching live in the chat, or if you're watching the archive version, go ahead and leave a message. Leave a message at the beep. No, leave a comment on the YouTube link or on any of the other places you can find us. Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can tweet us. We'll give you our Twitters at the end. You can always let us know what you think of the show. I don't know. I think that it was handled reasonably well, and it became apparent that there was going to really be one option. And I think that this was a really well written episode. It was a well directed episode by
your boy,
by Mr. Jonathan Frakes. And I obviously so many things tie together, you know, the chess game and the fact, you know, and we'll talk about the interaction that Burnham and Spock have and just how mean he was. But, you know, just this sort of idea of Burnham being someone who's always trying to save people that maybe she can't. And we see in that moment when Arium is like, you have to open the airlock. I'm going to come out of here and I'm going to kill you and basically lead to the end of all sentient life. Oh, but I like you. And I'm not saying it would be easy to do that, but for someone who is supposed to be, she's not Vulcan, but logic is supposed to be so important to her. She's very emotional.
To go back to Aramis for a moment, the other part of me that was thinking the whole time is, you also have a transporter. Why are we not, like, transporting her up and keeping you in transporter stasis?
Yes, and by the way, if you just say, like, I can't get a lock on her, okay, then that's all you need.
Yes.
I had that same thought, too. I'm like, why is this happening? And, you know, again, when it's a streaming show, your runtime can be anything. So there's no, like, oh, we had to cut that out for time. No, it's a simple thing to do. Because we know how the technology works. Just tell us why we can't use it. And even if it's like, well, all right, plot device, at least you've taken the time to address that concern. And I've been a little critical of Discovery for over-addressing fan concerns. But the fact that they listen and they know they're important, it's a lot different than other shows and movies and just some other fandom in general. Go ahead.
Because, you know, I feel like if you're watching an episode of Next Generation, and they would have those one-off episodes where there'd be a guest star that would come on and maybe not survive by the end of the episode. And you're fine with that because, you know, like, it is a very – as much as you're watching these characters kind of grow over the course of the 7 seasons, it still is kind of a – it's not so much serialistic. It's pretty much just standalone episodes that they'll have some continuity that they'll kind of address every so often. So you felt like, all right, if I'm just seeing a guest star come on for this episode and they're dead by the end of it, that's all right because it's just kind of the format of the show. But for Discovery, and a few other series have done it, you know, Deep Space Nine to the biggest extent.
Sure.
But a little bit of Voyager just because of the nature of the premise for the show. But for Discovery, I mean, it is one of the most serialized series for Star Trek. I mean, it's only in its second season, but...
No, but I mean, typically, you know, I mean, was it the last season of Deep Space Nine? They had like a 6-part episode, you know, I mean, you get that. But those are the exception, and that's also just one chunk of a season. The whole season, both seasons have really been about one story, you know? Yeah. I mean, they had a very firm break in season one, but this one, it seems like it's Red Angel all the way to the end.
And I was just like, for this, it's just, I want to like these beats more. I want to feel the danger, and it is like, the nice, you want to see some of the crew pass away, or they die in the course of their missions. But I want to be more invested in those characters. And get us more invested in those characters. And then feel free to do anything that you want with them. I mean, whether they live, whether they die.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to feel as moved as I think the writers want us to feel when I don't feel like those characters have been given enough time for us to get invested.
Right. And a death that I think we were able to feel and be surprised by, and there were emotions tied up, was when Tyler killed Hugh. Mm-hmm. Except, of course, for the fact that, you know, yes, he's very different, but he is still alive, you know, so it's, you know, we've kind of cheated out of that one. And Captain Georgiou is killed early in the series. They had a workaround for her, too. It's a different Captain Georgiou, but we still have her. So it is interesting. It's very tough to, I guess, really feel like upset. And yet at the same time, I felt like they did a very nice job, and there were some great reaction shots, you know. I thought it was really well done, the shot of her out in space, you know, Ariam out in space. You know, and we see everything shut down, and I thought it was very well done. The interesting thing is that Burnham is so hyper focused on Ariam, her fellow crew member, and having a lot of trouble dealing with her death, and seems to ignore the fact that Nan is like basically passed out on the ground because yes. She lost her apparatus that helps her breathe. Doesn't check on her. Like, you know, she's fighting Ariam at first, legit. You know, you can't get away. Although I feel like it could. Are you okay? You know, I thought maybe. And it's like, she'll just fend for herself and be all right.
Yeah.
Did you think about that at all? That it was just like, Burnham does not seem remotely interested in the fact that her friend is over there unable to breathe.
You would have thought that once she had Aramis kind of contained.
Ariam, sorry.
Yeah. That she would go back and check on them. Because it's like, you all came in there together, check on your fellow crewmate.
Yeah.
You saw her get her breathing apparatus ripped out of her face.
Yeah. Which,
give her a check.
You know, because we know that Ariam is, you know, somewhat possessed. When she asked that question, we're like, uh-oh.
Yes.
You know, you're like, I don't think, I was trying to think of, like, is there a reason she would want to steal it? You know, obviously I knew that there was going to be something nefarious going on. I was like, is she going to steal that apparatus for some reason? And it was like, nope, just wanted to make it impossible for her to breathe. Again, let us know what you thought about Ariam, the fact that we were just starting to get to know you.
I just thought it was interesting, just the whole concept that she would, every week, she has to download memories and archive ones that she wants to keep, and then discard ones that are trivial to her or don't really matter. I thought that was a really interesting concept, and it's just like, oh man, you just tease us with this little bit of an introduction to this character and what kind of makes her tick. And then she's gone.
Stress-Free K in the chat says that we can't hear your wisdom because Flobo is not with us. By the way, Flobo is just, again, on an away mission. He'll be back next week. It's not that he's no longer with us. He's just not with us this evening. I don't want there to be any rumors out there. I have my eyes on the chat. It's true. I am also steering the ship as well. But I can definitely let Frank take the helm while I'm looking and seeing what you're all saying, and very interested in all of your feedback. So please keep it coming. Even Daniel Brown, who is watching the show on mute because he wants to avoid spoilers because he's in Australia and I guess it's not on Netflix there yet. So he just wanted to say hi. But I can't say hi to him because he's got us on mute. So I wish I could hold up a sign that just said, hi, Daniel Brown, but I can't. So anyway, we appreciate people who tune in who can't even watch.
Yeah, I'll just give you a wave.
Yeah. Except the waves go down the drain backwards Australia. Dumb joke. We will talk more about this episode, and I will share some of your comments.
Ooh.
But first,
dun, dun, dun.
Frank has this very important message that just came to us from Starfleet Command.
That is right.
Aha! I knew it!
Right there. Hey, guys, before we move on to our next topic, we just want to thank you for making us ESPN or TV Talk. But for us to continue to grow, we are reaching out and asking for your help. So if you are on YouTube right now, hit that thumbs up button and subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. We'd love it. But no matter where you are, leave a comment in the so we can get involved in the conversation. You know, tell us how much you miss Flobo. You
know, they already are.
Great.
Yeah, they're definitely shouting out how much they miss Flobo.
But being part of AfterBuzz has meant so much to all of us. You know, Christian could go on for hours about how much it's meant to him.
Are you ready? I'll start now.
Here we go. Start the clock. But we truly appreciate you giving us the opportunity to do what we love. So thanks for supporting us and continue to enjoy our shows.
Thank you. So let's see. Stress-Free K in the chat says he's sort of giving credit to at Pan Wyvern, who said she cried because of Ariam's death. Because she was so noble about it. I mean, she was very matter-of-fact. It was like, you have to kill me. And again, so often in Star Trek, Frank, the good of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Or the one.
Yeah. And in this case, the one. And it's something that we also didn't address the fact that Burnham actually doesn't open the airlock. It's like Non comes back from the dead just in time to actually, it's like, oh, so I got to do this too? I can't even breathe, but fine. All right. Now she's dead. Are you happy? So, yeah, but all the same, you know, the sacrifice was very noble. And I see Stress-Free K says it was Arium's self-sacrifice and selflessness that made her death feel so bitter. I don't want people I really care about. Beta Artemis says Arium's death was emotional. And let's see. Anyway, so I'll keep looking through the chat. Yeah, there's more.
I mean, yes, it hits that kind of moment that you want at the end of the episode. But I feel like for topics that we discussed, you have all these people that are on the bridge with so many ideas. You've got Tilly, who's always coming up with an idea at the last second to save somebody's bacon, that nobody thinks of any other alternative to try to save Arium. It was just like, nope, she's got to go out that airlock.
And about our concern about, you know, like, why didn't they just use a transporter? Beta Artemis does have a good explanation. They'd mentioned that one of the mines messed up their systems, which is why they were having, you know, some trouble and trying to fix things. Great. A perfect line would have been, including the transporter, you know. But you're absolutely right, though. That makes sense. That's a logical explanation. But sometimes I still need to hear the logic explained to me.
Especially because they were beamed onto that space station or that prison.
It's true. It did work well enough for them to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know they got back just fine. So, I don't know. But, I mean, the one thing I did want to ask you is that we do get that scene with Christopher Pike as he's talking with the Admiral. And yeah. Christopher Pike gets on his little bit of his high horse, his moral idea about what Starfleet should be and what Section 31 could possibly do if they continue to kind of run roughshod all over Starfleet.
Yeah.
And is that why he was sidelined? And it was interesting to see the way that scene played out, where it's just like he gets this compliment paid and he's like, oh, it was just interesting.
He's
scene.
Just like, oh, so wait, you wanted the best of Starfleet, which is me, because I feel that way. All right, I guess it's all right to use some mines. Not the first time that we've seen mines used in Star Trek. I know that Captain Sisko did put some mines in front of the wormhole at one point. I don't remember the episode. I don't remember. I just know he did it. And clearly, mines are something that are used sparingly in Star Trek. But this was not the first time we'd seen them. Chronologically, it's the first time.
Yeah.
But in terms of our own timelines, it is not. Excuse me. Tony Z had an interesting point. That some random crew member should be the one to die. Bridge crew is off limits, especially when we were just learning about her. I understand that feeling, but I think that's one of the interesting things about Discovery. And again, they didn't kill Saru, but I was convinced they were going to. But the fact that they killed the captain on this show in the second episode of the first season, mm-hmm. they just wanted you to know, like, you kind of have to be ready, you know? And again, we've seen her again. We've seen Hugh again. But, you know, I don't know. I'm always a little more. I'm way more on edge on this show than any previous Star Trek. Do you feel that way, Frank?
I would agree because that Saru, the Saru episode, it does. I mean, for the longest time, you think, "Wow, I was excited." Remember when we talked about that episode? That with it being on CBS All Access, I mean, it just seems that the rules could be there could be no rules on this, and you could kill Saru. I mean, it'd be a shame to lose that character, but he'd been so built up, and you feel that emotion that it could possibly happen. And you feel like, holy cow, this could. It was nice to have that feeling when you're watching an episode of Star Trek. So, but I understand you can't go to that well too many times. You can't keep putting the bridge crew in danger and then always getting them out at the last minute. So, somebody needs to pay the price. I just wish I would have loved to have felt how I felt about Saru for Aramis as well.
Arium. God, that's how attached you are to her.
That's why I can't remember her name. But
no,
Arium.
It's fine.
Yeah. But yeah, if I had that same kind of feeling about her that I had for Saru, this episode would have hit me even that much harder.
Yes. No. I think that they did a great job making us care about somebody we barely knew. But just imagine if, you know, and again, it's a streaming show. You're able to do reshoots, add some new footage. You go back throughout the season and you make us care about her more than you did. And I think this is what you said. There was that 40-minute episode.
Yeah.
Perfect time to put her in there. Or the terrible third episode of the season. Just scrap the whole story, you know. Get rid of the baby Klingon and just deal with this.
Yeah.
Give us something that that is useful.
And I don't know. I guess I should look on Wikipedia or any of the Star Trek websites about more background about Arium, because I just feel like, you know, so she was a human at one point, and then she has this terrible crash or tragedy that happens, and then she is cybernetically enhanced.
Yes.
So, but what part of her is still human? It seems like it's tough to know.
It seems very hard to know. And it is a nice precursor for a character that we know is also in an accident and has to receive some enhancements, Christopher Pike. So it's it made me think of that, you know, the menagerie.
Yeah, I mean, because Detmer has some.
Yeah, hers are fairly minor. And we know why she has hers. Those are because of Burnham, you know, that basically Burnham starting the Klingon War. Because when we see her in the first episode, she doesn't have them. It's when we see her again when Lorca basically gives Burnham her get out of jail free card, we see her. And that's when everybody's like glaring at her, and her a little extra is like, yeah, I got these now. Thanks. Thanks, pal.
Because with Arium, it doesn't seem like she has a human brain, because she has to download information. So I'm wondering what part of her is still humanoid. I don't know. Things we'll never get to find out, though.
Yeah. Well,
she's gone.
You know, there'll be a novel. Maybe a comic book miniseries.
That's going to give us that backstory.
We'll get everything that we ever wanted to know. We did. I thought it was nice. And again, you know, we're really focused on this part of the story because they did work extra hard, you know, with she's downloading her memories. And so it's like, oh, look at these happy times that we've never seen before. But they were happy times. You know, I liked that she and Tilly had, you know, this bond that, again, we didn't know was there. I get
yep.
it. Look, Burnham's Spock's sister, and we're supposed to believe that. Not by blood. But, you know, so this is, if you can accept that, I can accept this. I did think it was nice to see some of that interaction. What did you think, trying to, like, up our emotional connection to her, but what did you think about the way that they did that on the show?
It was fine for what we got in this episode, but it just goes to everything we've talked about previously. It's like, yeah, it would have been nice to even see those little moments throughout the course of the season. You know, you could have these little one-offs, little bits and pieces, but we get it all now, so it's fine now, but would have been nice to have more.
Did you appreciate the shout-out to the game that they were playing, Catiscot, which was apparently mentioned on Star Trek Voyager, and I didn't remember that. That's thanks again to our friends at Den of Geek, who watch closer than I do, and they knew how to Google it, because I wouldn't have spelled it the way it was spelled. Did you catch it? Because the name
sounded familiar, but I would have thought Deep Space Nine, but no, because it's Dabo Girls,
right? Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot about how often that Dabo was in there. We also, I just want to make sure that we close the book on that storyline before we move on. And
any last takes?
Well, you know, you can continue to let us know in the chat, and we'll circle back at the end of the episode. Let's briefly talk about the return of Admiral Cornwell. I thought that she was an interesting character. I thought her romantic involvement with Lorca was sort of an interesting wrinkle. Was the last time we saw her, she was being tortured, because I feel like we hadn't seen her in a while. Maybe we've seen her once since then. I can't remember.
Because I know that, whatever her name is, Tavel? No. Well, whatever. Our Klingon Empress right now helped her escape.
Lorel.
Yeah. Helped her escape.
Yeah.
So I think that might have been the last. Oh, no, because I know when they made it back.
That is when we saw her. Yeah. Okay. So we have seen her since then, but she was not in a great way since then.
Yeah.
And it's good to know that she's someone that Pike can trust. You know, I think it adds value to the character to know it's like she's on the right side of things. She's not a by the book. You know, it seems like Section 31 for a Black Ops organization, they are fairly buttoned down by the number, not Giorgio. You know, but it seems like the rest of them in there certainly are. Yeah.
Well, are you satisfied now with it seems to be the revelation that, Section 31 control has now kind of taken over the operation? So it's the computers gain sentience, much like our Terminator films, much like Computo from Legion of Superheroes.
Yes. It is Skynet.
There you go.
For sure. I think it's interesting. It is an interesting threat that they face. I guess, the ship that Giorgio's on is not, it hasn't been to headquarters in a while. So I guess we're supposed to just deal with that, what did you think of Saru being able to recognize heat signatures through a view screen and or on video? I found that a little bit of a stretch.
It would be. I felt that is so weird that you could see that. Yeah. I mean,
like if it was somebody on the bridge or somebody that's interacting with in person.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. But it's like this was in video.
Yeah.
Like it's a video of a hologram. So it's like, I don't know. That's like I was able to sense this from a second generation VHS copy.
Yes.
Were you really? And again, these aren't the things that bother me, but these are the things that when you're a Star Trek fan, you can't help but think about it. You're just like, I feel like they could have been better there. You know, they could have come up with a better explanation for what he noticed, you know?
I mean, unless the view screens and the communication devices in Starfleet are so enhanced and refined that they are also not just transmitting video images, but they're also transmitting all kind of biometric signs, heat signatures, all that stuff as well. Not that we've ever seen that before. I guess that's a convenient thing. I guess the writer said, well, we've never not seen it. So who's to say that it's always
existed?
Yeah,
that's true. Anyway, let us know what you think in the chat about that. Let's move on and talk about Spock and his interaction with Burnham. And obviously, they have a very contentious relationship. They did reveal the flashback to us that showed Burnham's perspective as to where that was, why that was, when that was. What, Frank, did you think about the Burnham-Spock interaction in this episode?
I gotta admit, interesting, but also it's built on a foundation that I just really didn't buy into. Which we talked about last week was just that we get to see it just happened with a childhood argument. Like, oh, don't follow me, my lovely pet or friend or whatever. I've always hated you. You're terrible. That it happened as their children, and it just blossomed into where we're at right now. So I feel like, I wish the revelation of why they had such a contentious relationship or they had that rift was something a little bit more impactful.
Yeah.
That I could buy this argument more.
Yes, and also the fact that, his little outburst and I don't know, and again, yes, we've never seen Spock at this exact point in his life. However, we saw him in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
We saw him in the original series. So this is the time in the middle and, there's no explanation. It's not time for Pomfar. He's just... I don't know. It's a little tough to watch him be so emotional in this point and not grounded by logic, And I guess it's an interesting thing that, he scoffs at the idea of playing chess, but then we see him later. He realizes it actually can help kind of calm his mind down maybe and help look at things logically. So Burnham's right. He's just like, I am not going to own up to it right now. I'm not going to give you any credit for that. And I did like how Spock referenced his feelings about Sarek, because when we first meet Sarek in the original series, there's some degree of a reconciliation. It's been a while. So I like that that's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
He's just so mean to her, about... and she has to yell at him to shut up. That's all you can really do. You couldn't save your parents' lives. Stop thinking that you could. But it's like, all right, but don't make her relive it.
Yeah.
It's like that's terrible enough for her. you know, all of this. And it's like, well, you started the Klingon War. She's like, I know. You think I don't remember? It wasn't that long ago. What are you doing, dude? Come on. And, I mean, he has the interesting perspective, which is that, you know, these separatists didn't hate her because she was human. You're just a human. The fact that he's half human is something that's not meant to be. And I found that perspective. I'm like, well, that's actually very interesting that they probably both saw it as, you know, and it's certainly like a I'm the center of the universe, I'm a child sort of outlook. But he's not necessarily wrong, right? That they would, you know, whether she was there or not, they would have been going after Sarek because he is with a human. He had a child with a human. So he's really the one, I think, that that people have a problem with. Sarek, and by way of that, Spock, right?
That's right. Although those are things, that would be an interesting take to see that, because we've always seen Spock be the subject of that kind of torment from fellow Vulcans, even in the J.J. Abrams film.
Yeah, it's nobody's ever thrown rocks at Sarek.
Yeah,
you know?
But we've never really seen Sarek, I mean, be put in that situation.
Nope. Nobody ever egged his car.
That's right.
You know, there's no toilet paper in the tree out front. I don't think they have trees there, but you know.
I feel like I guess this relationship has to kind of stay where it's at. I don't know if there really can be that reconciliation, because otherwise,
no,
Spock would be talking about her in the original series.
Yeah, exactly. I think the relationship actually needs to get worse.
Yeah.
You know, by the end of Discovery and when we're done seeing Spock and Burnham interact, it has to be like, you know, some equivalent of you're dead to me, possibly literally, you know, because that would make sense. And he's just like, oh, he's too sad about it. You know, it's just like, I have to close off that part of it. Or he's just so angry at her, you know, because the stories of Michael Burnham are not told in any future that we've seen, you know?
Yeah. But would you be satisfied, though, if the writers or whatever created a scenario where it's just like these conversations did happen, but they always happened off camera?
I'm okay with that. I mean, I think that sometimes you just need to understand, you know, like, you know, it's look, on 24, it happened in real time, but there were commercial breaks. So you can ask the question of when did he go to the bathroom? But you know what? That's when, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, so things need to happen, you know? And it's like, it's fine sometimes for a story. Like, no, we didn't need to see all that. You just tell us that it happened. That's good enough, you know? So I think I would be satisfied, but I don't know. I want to have an overall feeling. I don't want any like sort of nagging feeling about how they copped out or handled it in the wrong way when this series ends. You know, I want to feel like, okay, it is believable that Spock doesn't talk about her for this reason, you know, and not just like, oh, no. Yeah, he used to talk to Kirk about her all the time. It's just, you know, never like when they were on a mission or anything.
What if you found out that Kirk and her hooked up once?
I wouldn't be surprised. Let's see. Would she be age appropriate?
She'd be an older woman.
Yeah. Hey, you know, that's the beauty of Jim Kirk.
That's right.
He's just like, are you female and do you have a pulse? And in some cases, two or three pulses, you know, just depends on the species. So
do you buy Spock's assessment of Burnham?
She's an afterthought?
But in terms of that she can't let anything go. She's got to always try.
I think that she's definitely, she feels like she can always figure a way out. You know, she's also someone who, like Jim Kirk, is not a fan of the no-win scenario. She feels like she can always figure it out. And we saw that in this episode. She's like, I just need one more minute. We just told you have 15 seconds. You don't have one more minute. You can't open that. We are going to have to, you know, put Arium out into space. If you don't, she's going to kill you. So then the fact that you didn't kill her is so noble for the 4 seconds that you're still alive. Good for you. I think obviously someone as logical as Spock, who knows his sister this well, I think he's got a pretty good read on people. And that's actually one of the things I wanted to also talk about when, he gives Stamets the assessment of the fact that, you know, Q needs space because he doesn't know how he feels about himself. It's not really about you. And you know, Stamets is usually good with the, you know, snarky one-liner or the mind your own business, you Vulcan half-breed. And he's just kind of like at a loss for words because he's like, think this guy's right. What did you think about him offering up that dating advice like he's Dr. Drew?
Well, I mean, I liked it for the sense it was just nice to see Spock interact with other members of the crew.
Yeah, I did like watching them interact together. Yeah, that's true.
So just, I was like, give me that scene. Yeah. It's nice to see somebody else's perspective of Spock.
Yeah, I know. It's Spock's like, it's impossible for me to do my work. Well, if you don't help me, we're all going to get arrested. Okay, I guess I'll help you. I liked that. You know, I thought that was, it was nice to see Spock and Stamets work together on that.
But to go back to one last thing about the Burnham and Spock thing, it is interesting to see him view that as a weakness or a character defect in Burnham, and yet something that he seems to appreciate in Kirk. Because, I mean, it is something that he's never held as a weakness against Kirk at all.
Yeah. No, it's very true. And as an aside, one thing I wanted to point out, apparently Burnham and Tilly are still roommates, and I really had the feeling from earlier in the season that Burnham had gotten her own quarters. Because I was like, oh, good for her. She finally, you know, I remember we had that conversation on the show. And apparently they're still roommates. And I was like, well, now I would have to go and rewatch all the episodes from the season, which, by the way, I would love to do. I just don't have the time for it. I like when we get to the final episode of the season, I would love to watch all of them, you know, the week leading up to it. I just know I don't have the time. But let me know in the chat, or even Frank, if you remember that, right? I felt like we saw her room and I had the feeling that, you know, there was no Tilliness there.
That could be true. I may have just like the angle that they've shot it at. Didn't see the Tilly stuff.
That's the explanation that I'm going to get from Starfleet. Don't worry.
I will say the one thing that kind of bummed me out towards the end of the episode is when Arium is about to be ejected and, you know, gives that brief little info dump of what she can tell before she's sucked out of the void.
You mean the title of the episode?
Man, well, that it's always been about you. The idea that it's about Burnham, which I'm just like, oh, man.
Well,
it's all centering on Burnham again.
I did like that because I was thinking like, oh, man, when Spock hears that. It's like, nah, the Red Angel is actually just talking to you because your sister's important. No, you're actually the one who's incidental. What do you think about that? Project Daedalus. So I like when the episode title is about like a reveal later, because this is not the first time this has happened this season. It's like, I was like, well, shouldn't another episode be called Project Daedalus where they find out what it is?
Yeah.
Like, just the fact that it's just called that now, you know? So,
what do you think this does? I mean, I can't think that the Red Angel is an older version of Burnham.
No.
Because she goes back in time and helps Spock save herself.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I still like the idea that it's Spock, but what if it's Scotty? I just picked somebody out of, you know, just... I don't know.
But for some reason, Burnham is now essential to stopping this whole thing, which I'm like, oh, man.
Well, because, it always comes back to, like, they need us to know how important she is. And she's very important, and we like her. That's fine. But does everything have to be about her?
No, it doesn't need to be.
Well, I guess that the creators of this show disagree with you.
Have you ever played third-dimensional chess?
I have not, but I could tell that Spock's heart wasn't – they only have one heart, right? I was just about to say his hearts weren't in it, but I'm like, wait, no, it's just one. I felt like, you know, that had to be annoying for Burnham, you know, I would say. Why? Have you played three-dimensional chess?
Never had, but it was interesting to see – I mean, I don't know if Spock's tactics were just merely to just irritate Burnham, or did he really have some kind of gambit that – Burnham was a really deep low undercover gambit that was going to catch Burnham unaware. I would like to see that game play out a little bit.
Yeah, I would have too, actually. And by the way, referencing Project Daedalus again, our friends at Den of Geek did the Googling so I didn't have to. Project Daedalus was a 1970s study conducted by the British Interplanetary Society, which good for them that they have one. The British Interplanetary Society to design a plausible unmanned interstellar spacecraft. So, much as we saw what happened to V'ger, perhaps Project Daedalus maybe got a little bit more advanced and, has some AI. So I would have Googled it, but then I saw their explanation. I was like, I'm going to just trust the Den of Geek doesn't lie to me. I'd be embarrassed if they did.
But if this becomes like a motion picture riff, are you going to be like, all right, man, the good stuff?
Well, that means we're going to see the ship for 20 minutes. We're just going to just pan the ship.
But I'll be kind of bummed if we just see just some kind of remix of...
Right, it's V'ger again.
Yeah, it's like, why are we seeing this? Come up with something else.
But what if Percy's Kambata is in it? Don't answer that. So anyway, we have a few more minutes, and we will dive into the chat. I just wanted to make sure that I got everything, so Nan is a member of the Barzan species, which is a species that was referenced in The Next Generation. It was nice to see the zero gravity boots and the little droplets of blood in the air, mm-hmm. Which is a shout out, or not even a shout out, but it's very reminiscent of Star Trek VI. The Undiscovered Country, and it's an even numbered one, so you know that's a good one.
That's right. Cry havoc.
Yeah. And then again, I have to completely give this credit to Den of Geek for this. So we see Arium offloading favorite memories of her friends onto the computer in Discovery, and which is very similar to something that Data did in Nemesis, which I have to admit I did not remember because Nemesis I've seen it once. And maybe I'll watch it again if I want to watch all the Star Trek movies with my kid. I probably will. But so far, it is. Let's just say it's not on the agenda. It's not on the schedule.
No,
the rewatch.
Right.
Yeah, I was surprised that I rewatched Star Trek Generations, although I only did it for this show. But before heading into a situation where Data might die, he gave his memories to his android, air quotes, brother, B4. It was very – it was implied that Data could return that way. So Arium offloading memories, maybe personality, maybe we could see her again. But I think for a character that we only kind of care about because she died and we didn't get to know her – I think that would cheapen it. Do you think if she comes back at some point, not involving like alternate realities and time travel or anything like that, would you just be like, oh, come on?
I mean, I feel like if anybody can come back, the fact that you can download somebody's memories, if not personality, back into some other life, other robotic body, I'd be fine with that. I mean, only because I'm intrigued by this character. I feel like we were cut short of the chance to kind of really explore her. But by bringing her back, that by no means means that we are going to actually get to see more of her anyway. So we could get her back, and it would be cool for the moment, but then she's just going to be relegated to the background again. And you'd be like, well, all right, well, didn't really know much about her after this.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not in a rush. As much as I think it would have been nice if we got to know her a little bit better, I don't actually need... To see more. Stress-Free K says that Tilly might make a little Arium doll, you know, just have a little something that she tucks under her arm when she goes to sleep at night. Yeah. You know? But Beaverus says if Arium came back, I'd guess it would be as the Red Angel. So her from a future... I think that's very unlikely. I don't think that's what it is, because we know it's human, right? I mean, we know that the Red Angel is human, although she's partially human. So sorry to be so speciesist there.
But maybe. I mean, I guess Spock would pick up even if you're the core of you is human, even if you have a bunch of enhancements, you'll still come out as human.
Yeah.
Mind meld.
Beta Artemis does have a great observation to go against what we say. That's right. We don't just read the comments when you agree with us, although those are our favorite. Beta Artemis, this is a show about Michael as the main character. It's her show. So it makes sense that it's about her. It's like saying Harry Potter shouldn't be about Harry Potter. Okay. His name is in the title. You know, it's like how Star Wars movies is like, do you really need more of the Skywalker family? Let's get some other people in there, you know? So I get it, but I don't know. Yes, it's a show that's about her, but it's a whole crew that there's time and space for us to get to know them.
I mean, I can understand that if that's your initial pitch. And I remember reading that about, too. It was like, we're seeing the show from a different perspective of the captain, a different entry point into the series. I remember reading that before it came out. And, you know, maybe for the first season, all right, that's a unique spin. But I feel like this season, it felt like the writers kind of realized, like, hey, we should flesh out the rest of this crew. So it's why you may come in with that initial mandate, like, this is our idea. Seeing, like, oh, the show evolves. You find out what's working, what's not. And if this season it says, like, we should flesh out more of this crew and becomes more of a true ensemble, I am absolutely fine with that. Because it's like, let's spread out the love. Burnham is not that kind of character that I absolutely need to have her be the center of attention the whole time.
Right, right, right. And just some housekeeping. Beta Artemis says that the room that I thought was Burnham's room, it was her science lab. So it was like her office. But at the same time, once she became a commander, she should. And I'm sorry, I lost where that comment was. So I can't give credit to the person who said it. But once she became a commander, she should have her own quarters. So, I mean, I agree, she should, but maybe they have that weird friendship seemed very unlikely in season one. Anyway, thanks so much to everybody in the chat. Obviously, I know you missed Flobo. He pays more attention to you. He's just cooler than I am. He's a more likable guy. He'll be back next week. He will read all of your comments next week. Your comments, questions, queries, complaints, all go to Flobo. But that is all the time we have for this week. Until next week, Frank, where do people find you?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Oh, yeah. And real quick, as I mentioned, the red shirts there, they did a study where they truly revealed that 32% of deaths are red shirts across the Star Trek universe, followed closely by yellow shirts at 29%. And that's due thanks to Next Generation, where they switched the colors and more to a command track became the red.
Well, I appreciate that. See, there you go. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Sunday nights, I talk Marvel TV at 9 Pacific. And Thursday afternoons at 1 Pacific over on the Popcorn Talk Network, I talk about Marvel movies. Thanks so much to everyone. Flobo, we missed you, but we'll see him and we'll see all of you next week. Until then, live long and prosper.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.